Chapter 51. From looking down into the street, staring through the window of a hackney cabriolet, into which, for conveyance to that spot, he had been ensnared, on a false pretense of rats among the straw. Sooth to say, he was as unlike a lady's dog as might be, and in his gruff anxiety to get out, presented an appearance sufficiently unpromising, as he gave short yelps out of one side of his mouth, and overbalancing himself by the intensity of every one of those efforts, tumbled down into the straw, and then sprung panting up again, putting out his tongue, as if he had come express to a dispensary, to be examined for his health. But though Diogenes was as ridiculous a dog as one would meet with on a summer's day, a blundering, ill-favored, clumsy, bullet-headed dog, continually acting on a wrong idea that there was an enemy in the neighborhood, whom it was meritorious to bark at, and though he was far from good-tempered, and certainly was not clever, and had hair all over his eyes, and a comic nose, and an inconsistent tail, and a gruff voice, he was dearer to Florence, in virtue of that parting remembrance of him, and that request that he might be taken care of, than the most valuable and beautiful of his kind. So dear, indeed, was this same ugly Diogenes, and so welcome to her, that she took the jeweled hand of Mr. Toots, and kissed it in her gratitude. And when Diogenes, released, came tearing up the stairs and bouncing into the room, such a business as there was, first, to get him out of the cabriolet. Comma dived under all the furniture, and wound a long iron chain, that dangled from his neck, round legs of chairs and tables, and then tugged at it until his eyes became unnaturally visible, in consequence of their nearly starting out of his head. And when he growled at Mr. Toots, who affected familiarity, and went pell-mell at Towlinson, morally convinced that he was the enemy whom he had barked at round the corner all his life, and had never seen yet, Florence was as pleased with him, as if he had been a miracle of discretion. Mr. Toots was so overjoyed by the success of his present, and was so delighted to see Florence bending down over Diogenes, smoothing his coarse back with her little delicate hand, Diogenes graciously allowing it from the first moment of their acquaintance, that he felt it difficult to take leave, and would, no doubt, have been a much longer time in making up his mind to do so, if he had not been assisted by Diogenes himself, who suddenly took it into his head to bay Mr. Toots, and to make short runs at him with his mouth open. Not exactly seeing his way to the end of these demonstrations, and sensible that they placed the pantaloons constructed by the art of Burgess and Company in jeopardy, Mr. Toots, with chuckles, lapsed out at the door. By which, after looking in again two or three times, without any object at all, and being on each occasion greeted with a fresh run from Diogenes, he finally took himself off and got away. Come, then, Di. Dear Di. Make friends with your new mistress. Let us love each other, Di. Apostrophe said Florence, fondling his shaggy head. And Di, the rough and gruff, as if his hairy hide were pervious to the tear that dropped upon it, and his dog's heart melted as it fell, put his nose up to her face, and swore fidelity. Diogenes the man did not speak plainer to Alexander the Great than Diogenes the dog spoke to Florence. Apostrophe he subscribed to the offer of his little mistress cheerfully, and devoted himself to her service. A banquet was immediately provided for him in a corner, and when he had eaten and drunk his fill, he went to the window where Florence was sitting, looking on, rose up on his hind legs, with his awkward forepaws on her shoulders, licked her face and hands, nestled his great head against her heart, and wagged his tail till he was tired. Finally, Diogenes coiled himself up at her feet, and went to sleep. Although Miss Nipper was nervous in regard of dogs, and felt it necessary to come into the room with her skirts carefully collected about her, as if she were crossing a brook on stepping stones, Also two other little screams and stand up on chairs when Diogen stretched himself. She was in her own manner affected by the kindness of Mr. Toots, and could not see Florence so alive to the attachment and society of this rude friend of little Paul's, without some mental comments thereupon that brought the water to her eyes. Mr. Domney, as a part of her reflections, may have been, in the association of ideas, connected with the dog. But, at any rate, after observing Diogenes and his mistress all the evening, and after exerting herself with much goodwill, to provide Diogenes a bed in an antechamber outside his mistress's door, she said hurriedly to Florence, before leaving her for the night, "Your pa's a going off, Miss Floyd, tomorrow morning." Apostrophe, tomorrow morning, Susan? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, miss, that's the orders. Early. Apostrophe, do you know, apostrophe asked Florence, without looking at her, where Papa's going, Susan? Apostrophe, apostrophe, not exactly, miss. He's going to meet that precious major first, and I must say, if I was acquainted with any major myself, which heavens forbid, it shouldn't be a blue one. Apostrophe, apostrophe, hush, Susan. Apostrophe, apostrophe, urged Florence gently. Well, Miss Floyd, apostrophe returned Miss Nipper, who was full of burning indignation, and minded her stops even less than usual. I can't help it, blue he is, and while I was a Christian, although humble, I would have natural colored friends, or none. Apostrophe, it appeared from what she added, and had gleaned downstairs, that Mrs. Chick had proposed the major for Mr. Domney's companion, and that Mr. Domney, after some hesitation, had invited him. Talk of him being a change, indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, observed Miss Nipper to herself with boundless contempt. If he's a change, give me a constancy. Good night, Susan, apostrophe, said Florence. Good night, my darling dear Miss Floyd. Apostrophe, her tone of commiseration smote the court so often roughly touched, but never listened to while she or anyone looked on. Florence left alone, laid her head upon her hand, and pressing the other over her swelling heart, held free communication with her sorrows. It was a wet night, and the melancholy rain fell pattering and dropping with a weary sound. A sluggish wind was blowing, and went moaning round the house, as if it were in pain or grief. A shrill noise quivered through the trees. While she sat weeping, it grew late, and dreary midnight tolled out from the steeples. Florence was little more than a child in years not yet 14, and the loneliness and gloom of such an hour in the great house, where death had lately made its own tremendous devastation, might have set an older fancy brooding on vague terrors. But her innocent imagination was too full of one theme to admit them. Nothing wandered in her thoughts, but love, a wandering love, indeed, and cast away but turning always to her father. There was nothing in the dropping of the rain, the moaning of the wind, the shuddering of the trees, the striking of the solemn clocks, that shook this one thought, or diminished its interest. Her recollections of the dear dead boy, and they were never absent, were itself the same thing. And oh, to be shut out. To be so lost. Never to have looked into her father's face or touched him, since that hour. She could not go to bed, poor child, and never had gone yet, since then, without making her nightly pilgrimage to his door. It would have been a strange, sad sight, to see her now, stealing lightly down the stairs through the thick gloom, and stopping at it with a beating heart, and blinded eyes, and hair that fell down loosely and unthought of, and touching it outside with her wet cheek. But the night covered it, and no one knew. The moment that she touched the door on this night, Florence found that it was open. For the first time it stood open, though by but a hair's breadth. And there was a light within. The first impulse of the timid child, and she yielded to it, was to retire swiftly. Her next, to go back, and to enter, and this second impulse held her in irresolution on the staircase. In its standing open, even by so much as that chink, there seemed to be hope. There was encouragement in seeing a ray of light from within, stealing through the dark stern doorway, and falling in a thread upon the marble floor. She turned back, hardly knowing what she did, but urged on by the love within her, and the trial they had undergone together, but not shared. And with her hands a little raised and trembling, glided in. Her father sat at his old table in the middle room. He had been arranging some papers, and destroying others, and the latter lay in fragile ruins before him. The rain dripped heavily upon the glass panes in the outer room, where he had so often watched poor Paul, a baby, and the low complainings of the wind were heard without, but not by him. He sat with his eyes fixed on the table, so immersed in thought, that a far heavier tread than the light foot of his child could make, might have failed to rouse him. His face was turned towards her. By the waning lamp, and at that haggard hour, it looked worn and dejected. And in the utter loneliness surrounding him, there was an appeal to Florence that struck home. "Papa! Papa! Speak to me, dear Papa!" Apostrophe, he started at her voice, and leaped up from his seat. She was close before him with extended arms, but he fell back. "What is the matter?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, he said, sternly. "Why do you come here? What has frightened you?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, if anything had frightened her, it was the face he turned upon her. The glowing love within the breast of his young daughter froze before it, and she stood and looked at him, as if stricken into stone. There was not one touch of tenderness or pity in it. There was not one gleam of interest, parental recognition, or relenting in it. There was a change in it, but not of that kind. The old indifference and cold constraint had given place to something. What, she never thought, and did not dare to think, and yet she felt it in its force, and knew it well without a name. That as it looked upon her, seemed to cast a shadow on her head. Did he see before him the successful rival of his son, in health and life? Did he look upon his own successful rival in that son's affection? Did a mad jealousy and withered pride, poison sweet remembrances that should have endeared, and made her precious to him? Could it be possible that it was gall to him to look upon her in her beauty and her promise? Thinking of his infant boy, Florence had no such thoughts. But love is quick to know when it is spurned and hopeless. And hope died out of hers, as she stood looking in her father's face. "I ask you, Florence, are you frightened? Is there anything the matter, that you come here?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, I came, Papa, apostrophe, against my wishes. "Why?" Apostrophe, she saw he knew why. It was written broadly on his face, and dropped her head upon her hands with one prolonged low cry. Let him remember it in that room, years to come. It has faded from the air, before he breaks the silence. It may pass as quickly from his brain, as he believes, but it is there. Let him remember it in that room, years to come. He took her by the arm. His hand was cold, and loose, and scarcely closed upon her. "You are tired, I dare say," apostrophe he said, taking up the light, and leading her towards the door, "and want rest. We all want rest. Go, Florence. You have been dreaming." Apostrophe, the dream she had, was over then, God help her. And she felt that it could never more come back. "I will remain here to light you up the stairs. The whole house is yours above there," apostrophe said her father, slowly. "You are its mistress now. Good night." Apostrophe, still covering her face, she sobbed, and answered, "Good night, dear Papa," apostrophe, and silently ascended. Once she looked back, as if she would have returned to him, but for fear. It was a momentary thought, too hopeless to encourage, and her father stood there with the light hard, unresponsive, motionless until the fluttering dress of his fair child was lost in the darkness. Let him remember it in that room, years to come. The rain that falls upon the roof, the wind that mourns outside the door, may have foreknowledge in their melancholy sound. Let him remember it in that room, years to come. The last time he had watched her, from the same place, winding up those stairs, she had her brother in her arms. It did not move his heart towards her now, it steeled it. But he went into his room, and locked his door, and sat down in his chair, and cried for his lost boy. Diogenes was broad awake upon his post, and waiting for his little mistress. Oh, Di. Oh, dear Di. Love me for his sake. Apostrophe, Diogenes already loved her for her own, and didn't care how much he showed it. So he made himself vastly ridiculous, by performing a variety of uncouth bounces, in the antechamber, and concluded, when poor Florence was at last asleep, and dreaming of the rosy children opposite, by scratching open her bedroom door, rolling up his bed into a pillow, lying down on the boards, at the full length of his tether, with his head towards her, and looking lazily at her, upside down, out of the tops of his eyes, until from winking and winking he fell asleep himself, and dreamed, with gruff barks, of his enemy. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.